I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Tom Giordano on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
It is Dom time. Welcome in. You know, I was going to put this up as the Philadelphia story on Twitter today. I still might. The Philadelphia Flower Show, we're almost on the cusp of that, right? And vendors are complaining because... the cost of electricity has spiked. Let me give you the figure here. This year's vendors, right. Small marketplace vendors, those with booths of about 100 square feet, paid $165 last year for 10 days of power. Now, Dan, I don't know. We need some electrical people out there. I don't know if you ever, you worked in restaurants. That seems outrageous to me. That price, right? They're not there forever. $165 for 10 days of power?
That's a lot.
Yeah. This year, the cost for the same 500 watts is nearly $400.
Wow.
Yes.
Is that the total cost, though, for the whole week?
No, that's for the just the 500 watts of power.
Oh, man.
The total cost for these small little things, they're already paying an average of $4,375 to rent booth space. Now this will take it up by that number too. So I guess we're at like closer to $4,600, $4,700.
Wow.
And they claim the union has no involvement at all, the electrical, the Johnny Dock, and the surging costs whatsoever. The electricians are not benefiting from the rate increase at all. And they cite the fact that for the bigger exhibitors, maybe not these small people though, they're allowing exhibitors to erect and tear down their own booths at the bigger conferences. All right? Yeah, well, why couldn't you do that? Why is that such a big deal? It's just amazing. Alex Trebek, in fact, was one of the guys, Jeopardy, that said they would never come back here again. There's any number of people like that. Well, you know what they're thinking? Look. You got to do the flower show in Philadelphia, right? It is the Philadelphia Flower Show. You couldn't take it to the suburbs. So the mentality is you're just going to have to pay for this. That's it. I need somebody with electrical experience. Does that seem, I mean, imagine it's $400, 500 watts of power. That seems like an awful lot of money to have to engage in it. Just amazing. 855-839-1210, AT&T, and Verizon Wireless. All I need you to do is just reach out. You push #1210, and we'll get you on board. A salute or a remembrance, a eulogy for the Boy Scouts. And because Dan was in the Indian Guides, who had chiefs, and the girls' side was the Indian Maidens. This has opened up all kinds of people, like our friend Tony, who was a dad who was a chief in this. Side question of the day, a simple one. A celebrity that's aging well or a celebrity that's aging badly? Let me take one off the board that I think would be almost impossible to beat, but it came through email, and I don't see anybody with it. Betty White, aging well.
Yeah.
Is Betty White about 98 now? What is the... I know she's not 100, so
she's
going backwards.
She's 98.
98.
98.
I didn't know that was a guess. Okay.
But she's looked the same since Golden Girls.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was in 92.
Yeah, and she's still funny. She's still an object of that. Yeah, Betty White, 98. I think she still does some things. She has aged incredibly well. She's a bigger star in some ways, more of an icon anyhow.
She's one of those stars that when she does eventually pass, she'll be remembered as her older self than her younger self.
Yes. That's always an interesting thing.
Yeah, I don't think there's many celebrities out there that follow that.
She's a superstar by virtue of the fact that she's outlived everybody else.
Right, but Dan's point was a good one. When you see most celebrities when they pass, the earlier days, And yeah, somebody Joe's age, for example, doesn't remember celebrity X. Well, he's a little bit different, but because of their early days in show business or celebrity or whatever they were versus the later days where they weren't.
And I think that's similar for someone like Tony Bennett. Like, I don't even know what Tony Bennett looked like when he was younger. I just have the I imagine him as he looks now.
Strangely, he looked pretty much the same except the hair.
Tony Bennett's more well-known now for what he's done, that he's ageless. He was never Frank Sinatra. He was always second rate to that. Let's face it. I mean, he's up there, but he's not Sinatra.
Yeah.
But now, because he's still performing, still out there, what is he, 95?
Mm-hmm.
Tony Bennett, I want to say about that. He's big.
I think another name is Clint Eastwood will be remembered as his older self rather than his young. Actually, that's debatable.
No,
he's dirty Harry and all, but now he's the director.
You're wrong about that. He's going to be remembered as Dirty Harry. Dirty Harry is one of the top 10. You know, if I were in a better, I need a little time here to do the imitation. Mm-hmm. I'm working up on it.
And let me give you one more.
Yes.
Ron Howard.
Well, do you punk?
Ron Howard. Do you think he'll be remembered as Opie or you think
he'll be remembered?
No,
the director.
Yeah.
The director,
But
Ronald McDonald.
No, give me the all-time one. Jane Fonda.
Yep.
Now, there's been three iterations of Jane Fonda. We have the Jane Fonda, well, there's four, who was Barbarella. She was a sex symbol. Then we have the Jane Fonda with the gun in North Vietnam. I'm praying that's what she's remembered at. Then we have the exercise tape Jane Fonda. And now we have the climate activist, plastic surgery every other day, Jane Fonda. People out there, Dan, are saying, yes, I know what they're going to do in the obit, the New York Times and others. They're going to try to remember her as wife of Ted Turner, movie star. Nope, nope, nope. The first line of her obit is traitor, Jane Fonda. That's it. And it should always be that way. I don't care how long she lives and how long we still have people of Vietnam age. They're listening right now. They will say, no, that's the first line of the obit, traitor. Jane Fonda, who, if we had a declared war, would have been tried as a traitor. When you're pointing guns toward in North Vietnam, sitting in a gun turret, pointing guns toward American planes if they fly over, it doesn't get much worse than that. 855-839-1210. But Clint Eastwood, I still would say, Dirty Harry's so iconic, he's going to be remembered for that, as great of a movie director. You know, that as he has been, yeah, he would be that. I think that would be the vote.
Yeah.
As much as I love Gran Torino and stuff like that, Dirty Harry just can't.
Yeah.
Can't top it. I mean, the stuff that he did there.
Yeah, because the example in the opposite direction that I'm thinking of is when Michael Jackson died, nobody, you know, wanted to remember him as the noseless
right.
Michael Jackson in his late life.
They were younger, sure.
Yeah, yeah. So, I just...
Or maybe middle age, you know, not as a kid performer. Mm-hmm. I think he was more remembered when he was the performer.
Yeah. Yeah, or like just after the Pepsi commercial, that kind of era of Michael Jackson.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, so Betty White, when she passes, will be remembered as...
I'll give you one that just jumped into my mind. Cindy Crawford looks great today, has aged well. But when they did that Pepsi commercial with those two 10-year-old boys and Cindy Crawford was just walking on the side and they said, that's some Pepsi, drinking a Pepsi. I've never seen anything. I mean, she just burst on the scene. It was incredible. That was tremendous ad. All right, let's go to Dave in Philly. Dave's hanging in on Talk Radio 1210. Hey, Dave, welcome in.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Good, Dave.
Yeah, I'm calling about the Scouts.
Yes.
Yeah, get off speakerphone. You know, honestly, the last caller, I think most of the kids joined because of the Pinewood Derby. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm listening, Dave. Go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, okay. No, I you said what the decline was. I was I was in the Cub Scouts for 6 years. Five were den leader and one as the Cub Master. And I learned early on that I have two boys, so I learned that whatever I have to do, I got to make it really cool for these kids.
Right.
They didn't like the idea of wearing a uniform and
and a
Class B. So I went to my first roundtable. Roundtable is when all the leaders get together and they brainstorm on ideas so I can come back and do some projects with my troop. Well, the first one I go to, the gentleman suggested he had cardboard boxes made like cars and the kids with socks on, and he had them running around the room racing. And I'm thinking to myself, no way. I'm not going to bring that. I mean, obviously some of this stuff is age appropriate, but
right.
My kids are a little older.
Right.
And I said, no way, I cannot.
Well, what do you
back.
Think happened so, with the Scouts? What's your thought today? The death.
Well,
of the Scouts?
I noticed with the Scouts is that I noticed more and more moms were getting involved. No dads
okay.
were showing up, and it's sort of like the dilemma today, even with schools. You become the surrogate parent, and you have to resolve and play the role as a father. So with that, yeah, I took the kids fishing, camping, and one of my I'm thinking of the. Turning point was we had two boys fighting around the campfire. So I grabbed each one of them and I threw them down to the down on a chair. And fast forward, I was at a funeral at a viewing, and I noticed another den leader, troop
right.
leader, who and I was telling her the story, and she jumped on my case saying, "You should have never grabbed them. You're not allowed to touch these kids."
There you go. That's a good example. All right, that is from a guy right on the inside of how the Scouts changed. Some would say for the better, and again, more modern. No. I think they moved away from their moorings here big time. All right, 855-839-1210, you get a line. Okay. President Trump won by under 1% in Pennsylvania. I don't have the exact figure in front of me, Dan. I think it was 44,000 votes. I think that sticks in my mind. Approximate, right? Here's a headline from WHYY today. Could Pennsylvania's 43,000 new citizens make the difference in the 2020 election? Meaning, throw Pennsylvania to the Democrats. Now, you might be asking, well, wait a minute. Who are these people? Well, they say at least 43,000 immigrants have become Pennsylvania citizens since the 2016 presidential election. That's almost as many voters as the margin Trump won by. What that means for the 2020 election is interesting. They say the growth of the immigrants is really in the suburbs. More and more immigrants are trying to become citizens since the last presidential election. Oh, well, you know what? Let's break that down. Could it be because President Trump has pushed this now, this nonsense of just being a green card holder forever? In 2018, 761,901 green card holders obtained citizenship, the highest number in 5 years, according to U.S. Department of Homeland Security. To become a citizen, an immigrant must be first a lawful permanent resident for at least 5 years, read, speak, and write basic English to qualify. But becoming a citizen doesn't mean you'll turn out to vote. Historically, the more recent the immigrant, the less likely that person is to register and vote. Now, here's where the twist comes in. However, local immigrant and refugee-focused nonprofits say there's some reason to believe that the number one reason why these people became a citizen was because they want to vote. Get it? Trump. Get it? That's why they're applying for citizenship. And here's one. Here's a typical response. A woman who came from Guinea says she's excited to vote for the first time and for a, wait for it, Dom, Democrat in November. Democrats care about health care and they care about poor people. That's the reason for me. Now, historically, we were able to accommodate legally immigrants toward the American way, American value systems, and all the rest. It pains me. But I have, you've heard over the last couple of years, and I wonder if you've had to even become doubtful toward legal immigration in general. For this very reason, people coming from countries where this is not going to fit with a conservative government, limited government principles. And this woman and this quote and what I suspect is happening here with these 43,000 new citizens. Now, you would expect a new citizen would say, well, I want to be an American. Which one of these has the more traditional American values? Or are these people saying, I want the government to do something for me, as this woman is? And I think that's why they wrote this article. So here's another, 43,000 new immigrants. Let's see Trump win Pennsylvania now. And the number one reason they gave why they wanted to become a citizen was to be able to vote. In the past, these were reluctant voters. Now, I still think Pennsylvania is very doable. There's a story out there today trying to say that if you're against fracking, as Bernie, Elizabeth Warren, most of these people are by and large, that that doesn't matter, that Pennsylvanians, in this poll they cite, opposes fracking. Well, the overwhelming number of people in Philadelphia do, but you get out there into the hinterlands and you get with moderate Democrats and the rest, I don't think they're opposing fracking and fossil fuels. I don't even think they're opposing it a little bit. 855-839-1210, you get a line. AT&T and Verizon Wireless, you push pound 1210. So on a scale of 1 to 10, when it comes to legal immigration, given stuff like this, I'm only at about a 7 at this point. I'm very much down from being a solid 10 as I used to be. I see the danger of this. I see what we're up against here also.
You're still a 10, Dom.
No, I'm not. Nope.
A 9?
Nope. An 8. There you go. A 7? A 7 on this issue. All right. 855-839-1210. You get a line right now. AT&T.
I have great legs, though. Just
well, that part, yes.
My wife says, at least.
AT&T and Verizon Wireless, you just push pound 1210. We'll get you on board. Side question of the day for the Dom Time calendar. We've gotten some great ones. Celebrities aging well or badly, your choice. So far, we've had Val Kilmer, Jim Gardner, Selma Hayek, and gotten the better ones on Twitter or email like Betty White. Hit us with that at 855-839-1210. Now, I didn't do this yesterday, but I wanted to update you on something I'm writing. Hopefully, deadlines, got to get it done today. That'll be in the Buckskin and Courier Times and Doylestown Intelligencer, and it has an area connection to it big time. We told you last week, it was Friday, Dan, we had a lot of response to this, that Governor Wolf, this guy who is just a mystery, right, surfaces in his budget with the battle cry, I'll bet on the kids. The kids here are people with student loan debt. And this guy wants to take the money that was worked out as an agreement between the horse racing industry and slot machines, money they get to fund all the things that go into horse racing and help to create an unbelievable number of jobs, okay? And it's not taxpayer money. It's not. This guy, though, goes on the attack. And then, just like with the soda tax, just like with Big Soda, suddenly horse racing is evil. On Friday, the Philadelphia Inquirer editorial board uses their editorial space to attack horse racing. They start with what good does this do? Why do people like it? The number of horses that die nationally on all that stuff. It's amazing. These progressives, we're talking about the death of the Scouts today. But here's another local one. Now, I'm not a huge fan of horse racing or anything, you know. Yeah, I mean, I've been to one at Parks because we're doing an event there. I don't know the last one I was before that. It is exciting. One of the most thrilling moments in sports to me was at the Belmont, the year that, what's the all-time horse that won?
American Pharoah?
No. The big that was laughing at, why am I blanking on a name? That won the Belmont by like 25 lengths. And won the triple.
I know you're talking about. Now I'm blanking too.
Yes.
The ginger horse.
No. It's not. No, it's the all-time, arguably the greatest athletic achievement of
Secretariat?
All time. Secretariat.
Okay.
Secretariat.
Yeah, that's the ginger horse.
Oh, okay. Secretariat was laughing at these other horses. It was like a machine. It was like the greatest player ever engaged in that. It was thrilling to see that as it lengthened to decimate the field. We've rarely seen that in sports, okay? So, suddenly, because of student loan debt, so I started digging for the article that I'm writing, and I saw this horse racing group and all that in another part of Pennsylvania. And the guy really gets it said. He talks about all the jobs that he helps to create, his farm, the breeding, the horses, and others. And then he says, and we're going to take that money and give it to people who have done nothing. What do they create? And isn't that right? If you have a student loan debt, hey, that's on you. And the bigger it is, the more that it's on you and your choices. Or it's on big college. When is big college going to be attacked? Well, I'm attacking it in these two papers. In the mainstream, that's so out of, oh my God, how can we even question this? That the horse racing industry ought to go away so that these students will have their student loan debt paid off. Just think of this guy, Wolf. This is the only thing he surfaces on in that galaxy far, far away called Harrisburg. So I'd love to get you in. This is exactly what they did, what they always do, these progressives. I'll bet on the kids. That's what he said in his budget speech. To take apart, and as I understand it, it would severely compromise the horse racing business, which is a big thing connected to casinos and all that, and jobs. I mean, I've seen some estimates that are incredible, the number of jobs that are connected to this in one way or another. And isn't this guy right, that quote about, I'm creating jobs, I'm part of this, I'm proud of what we do, being savage. Now it's big horse racing, like big soda, being savaged. And the idea is that, hey, take that money and give it to the kids. These kids being 22 to 25 to 28 to God knows what, to pay off their student loan debt so they don't have to worry about that. And they'll stay here in Pennsylvania and everybody will be happy. How many industries can these stinking progressives, how many industries can they wreck? How many can they target? Notice how quickly they jump on it. Wolf says it in the budget, bang, editorial board all over it at the Philadelphia Inquirer. It's exactly how big soda was treated. Just think about it 20 years ago. Would you be living to think that people delivering or making soda are treated as villainous in certain progressive minds and in Philadelphia? Yeah, they are. It's like they're drug dealers. Now it's horse racing. And I was unaware of how big of an industry this is with all the backup in Pennsylvania. They don't care. They are never going to take on college. College is another sacrament here. They don't care what these people charge. Now, you know what will happen. If they take this and they start cutting out the student loan debt, the colleges are going to continue to raise it. That's exactly what they do. They will not stop because they think they're outside the boundaries, and they are, of how these things work, of a capitalist society. They're outside those boundaries. Somebody will come in and bail them out. We have the second highest student loan debt, Penn State, out of control. They have enough people to support them. We're going to do whatever we want. Screw the horse racing industry. Why do we need that anyhow? The poor horse, the whole thing starts. It's very, very reminiscent to big soda. All right, phone lines are 855-839-1210. You get a line. AT&T and Verizon Wireless, you just push #1210. Where's the support for this? I don't think any rational person would fool around with an industry like this. The guy's right. To prop up a bunch of people who are coming as debtors. How do they have priority over people that are creating jobs? What will all those people do? Well, they'll follow the Bloomberg plan. So if all these jobs went away, I've seen guesstimates to 100,000 one way or another that are associated with this. Well, let them go into something environmental. Let them install solar panels or something. We don't care. Let them all code. That's what Joe Biden says. They have to learn code. Everybody's going to be doing that. Or maybe they'll just be a farmer. Like Bloomberg said, they won't be involved in this. How many times can they get away with this? Attacking an industry they don't like because of their own politics in one form or another. And then spinning it toward more control. Telling people, yeah, you can go to these high-priced colleges and we'll bail you out. It's an incredible thing. Now, do I think he's going to get away with this? No, I don't think so. But I don't believe in letting it go on. 855-839-1210. If you told me Philadelphia would capitulate and still a couple of years in, still have the soda tax when the rest of the country's turned against it, I would have said, yeah, in Philadelphia, that's what's going to happen. Philadelphia is dumb and ignorant. It will continue to vote for people that engage in this. So two big stories today, in my view, that are overwhelming everything else. The Boy Scouts are dead. Bankruptcy. Unbelievable number of sexual abuse claims or verified that they can't keep up with. And the other is Bloomy is in. All right, the bad nanny is going to be in the debate. And here is Mika this morning. I guess this was this morning. Maybe it was yesterday, Dan. I'm not sure. Mika Brzezinski on Morning Joe and the Reverend Al Sharpton. Now, one of the things that they're trying to expose here with Bloomberg is buying off black activists. The idea that Al Sharpton is just waiting to give him a pass. And she actually uses that word and brings it up. We saw when the tape, here's the point you should use that I've said many times, and people are picking up on it now. When the stop and frisk thing broke, I support stop and frisk, a lot of you do, but not in the manner that Bloomberg was talking about, how casual he was, throw people against the wall, people of color, that kind of thing. No, 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 no. You're not going to give a bad name to something that worked, that you thought worked, and just your condescending attitude. You've done damage there. Casual in how condescending he is. That's the point. So listen to this exchange about Bloomberg. How much money is he spreading around with African-American activists and these pastors like, oh, I don't know. By the way, Al Sharpton, from his presidential campaign, which was eons ago, still owes, allegedly, $950,000. How much money does this man owe to the world, meaning Sharpton? Would Bloomberg say, how big would this endorsement be for Bloomberg? I don't think he needs to do it, Dan. Here's why. It seems at this point that black voters are getting a pass. They're willing to go with this guy, anything to beat Trump, they're being convinced of. So it doesn't matter that he's been directly involved with policies that conflict with what they usually say. They're being inundated with his ads, and they're believing he's the only one that can beat Trump. So let him do it and say whatever he wants. Now, when evangelical voters say, well, we support Trump. We get it, what you're talking about, the divorces and the other stuff. But we look at the big picture here, and we think that Trump is delivering for America in all the right ways. They get killed for that. Constantly, the media digs up people to lecture if you're an evangelical. Well, how are black voters then accepting Bloomberg here? All right, here's Mika Brzezinski, Al Sharpton, breaking down how much money Bloomberg's spending.
So, Reverend Al, I mean, he is a disruptive force, and you are in a position to give him the support he needs or the pass he needs, and I'm certain he's looking for it. What do you know about Mike Bloomberg in terms of being able to believe him and knowing whether he will put his money where his mouth is?
Well, if he's looking for a pass from me, he needs to go to the next pass. I'm not giving anyone a pass. I, again, would challenge him to show any way, shape, or form why we ought to believe that he is sorry when he did it 4 days before he announced for president, announcing he was sorry. And I am just saying that at the same time, and I said this when I ran in 04 to those candidates then, everyone needs to come on and show us what they're doing. I clearly led a lot of the marches and rallies against Bloomberg, and I've clearly held him to task on this. But I don't want to say that everyone shouldn't be held to task. But under no circumstances am I saying that Michael Bloomberg should not have to demonstrate, if he can, and that's a big question, that he wants to try and repair or at least make an effort toward the damage he did. But I also want to know Tom Steyer, the other billionaire in the race. How many blacks work in your companies? I want to know about the issues I've raised on Biden and Bernie.
Yeah.
And I think that if we give anybody a pass, then it looks like we're only being political to do it on one candidate. I think that they all need to come clear, but clearly Bloomberg has a lot that he has to show for.
Well, Dan, I translate that to be Reverend Al is saying they're all going to have to pay my enterprises here one way or another. That's what this comes down to. How could you make the case for Bloomberg in any place and anywhere? Who's making that case? Well, you know what it is. Deep down, they're saying he's the only one, the money. We're fine with that. Usually we're not. Our democracy is being overwhelmed by this. Tucker Carlson was brilliant last night, laying out how different this is. Now, we don't know if money can buy elections, but what Bloomberg is doing is so overwhelming. I would say this. You may not be able to buy the presidency, but he can buy the nomination. That's what it's coming down to. It's not just the ads. It's that he's buying off key groups of people that are the infrastructure of the National Democrat Party one way or another. They've gotten money from him before. They're getting money now, and they hope to get it in the future. Or new people that he's promising this toward. That's what it comes down to. That's what we're going to see. That's how he got into the debate. Now, I'm thrilled he's in the debate. I'm shocked that he's this cocky that he thinks he's going to do well in this debate. No way. I predict he's going to be roasted tomorrow night big time, up and down the line on everything. And he's not the type of guy that puts up with being challenged. So you could see a huge meltdown tomorrow night. All right, phone lines are 855-839-1210. AT&T and Verizon Wireless. You just push pound 1210 and we'll get you on board. It's amazing how many condescending, offensive things just in this first week that we're actually paying attention to Bloomberg that we've been able to play you and put out there. Just incredible how arrogant this guy is. All right, something I've been saving, I didn't do on President's Day yesterday, that trying to think of the agenda behind this. Suddenly, Philly.com comes out with this study that says a Philly family of four, Philadelphia family of four. Dan and Joe, we'll start with Joe. Joe, how much do you think a family of four, they say, must make a year just to survive and not have help from government sources, a family of four in Philadelphia?
In Philadelphia. I'd have to say at least $100,000.
$100,000? Wow.
Hey, now.
Dan, what do you say?
46.
46. Well, that is what the figure is of the median income of said family.
Did I really
of
get
four.
That right?
That's a median income. No.
Hey, now.
What they say, and this is all agenda-driven, it's $70,000 a year for a family of four to survive without help.
My next guess.
Joe's at 100. My God, it's the end of the world.
I thought 70, but I said, well, it's not the suburbs, okay. It's Philly.
Right. In the suburbs, they also have the figure. What's the suburbs, Joe?
I don't know, 50?
No, the suburbs would be higher, right? Dan, what do you think the suburbs?
Higher?
Yeah.
82.
It's 88 in the suburbs, according to their sources. Now, I think they're doing this on the high side. And then they tell you what the real figure is. They say this is a self-sufficiency standard that an adult has to make $65,122 to subsist without aid. Philadelphia, it appears the majority of households don't make enough money to cover basic costs. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, 60% of city households, nearly 365,000, taken less than $60,000 a year, 70% earn less than $75,000. So, you know what this is pointing to? All right, so let's say I buy these figures up and down the line. What do I point to? Well, Trump and the Trump economy and everything about it, we want to see people have their income rise. Everybody across the board, right? All right, are you buying those numbers, though? They're saying the absolute floor for a family of four to survive in Philadelphia without big-time aid, government aid, is $70,000. In the suburbs, across the board, it's $88,000 to survive without big-time government aid. This is all toward pushing this idea of there has to be more of this. Now, then we get into the whole income inequality thing going on, that debate. Well, then how does a guy like Bloomberg, worth $61.8 billion, how does he get a pass? Well, he gets a pass because he's not Donald Trump. He's attacking Trump. He might beat Trump. So if he's willing to do that, let him have any money he wants. Let him do whatever he wants. It doesn't matter. That seems to be what they're saying. I'd love to get you in at 855-839-1210, AT&T, and Verizon Wireless. All you have to do is push pound 1210. Side question of the day. Just hit us with that celebrity that you think is either aging well or badly. I got several emails. Mickey O'Rourke is the number one, Dan. He was one of your candidates, aging badly. And Kelly McGillis. Several people had that one, too. She's not that big of a star that people have noticed that, but that's out there. Any more on Twitter?
Yeah, one sec. Got to pull it up. Kate Smith's statue has aged well because it's locked in a warehouse somewhere.
In Chester, held hostage. That's a good one. Kate Smith's statue.
Can,
we take outside
weathered,
the box.
Right?
Over. Yes. It's not weather-beaten.
Someone that aged horribly, Harvey Weinstein.
Yes, well, yeah.
Well, walking with a walker all of a sudden.
Particularly on trial, yes. The walker's not a good look if you want to say you haven't, yes.
Sammy Sosa.
Aged. Poorly,
well,
yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr both aging well. Two lads knocking on the door of 80 years old, and they look 20 years younger than their
McCartney
age.
McCartney does. I don't know about Ringo Starr.
I think Ringo looks younger than McCartney.
Okay. I haven't seen him recently. McCartney looks great, though, yeah.
Will Smith for aging well, which is definitely very true.
Yeah, he's boyish looking, yeah.
Years.
How about Tom Cruise?
Yeah, that's a good one, too.
I despise Tom Cruise, so I would pull that one back.
Will Smith, Sylvester Stallone for horrible. Got Salma Hayek a few times. But the consensus on Twitter, and it hasn't been said on air yet, Jennifer Aniston, aging well.
Yes, she has. She's 50.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she looks great.
Yeah, well, we don't know what the modalities are, but yeah, I would have to agree with that. All right, phone lines, 855-839-1210, AT&T and Verizon Wireless. You just push pound 1210. Are you buying those figures? So the argument is, if people are that much below 70,000 a year in Philadelphia and 88,000 in the suburbs, the government, however much they're below that, has to intervene and give them that kind of benefit in order to bring them up to par to survive. Does it cost that much? Are they right about that? And as I said, Bloomberg is the story today, and tomorrow is going to be an even bigger story. We have a montage that Dan has put together of some of the things that he said that have just been out in the last few days. We'll play that for you coming up. It is incredibly fun, but it's incredibly terrifying, too, to picture this guy as president.
You got it!
Yeah, I I've said, Bernie, you worry about the communism and all that. I get it. I don't think that's going to happen. This guy, though, this is a real test. And when we hear constantly, Trump is a test of our democracy, well, really, our republic, this guy is doing something incredibly novel. He is getting his way so far, at least toward buying the nomination. I still don't believe he can buy the presidency. We'll see. Time, I think, here. Good Tuesday. Welcome in. I am loving the intensity. By the way, in Nevada, they're already predicting they're going to have potential meltdown in their caucus on Saturday, I believe, right? A la what happened in Iowa, or maybe a mini Iowa. And you know, President Trump will be there on top of that. Here they go again. They want to run the country. They want to run your health. And they can't even run a stupid caucus. Some reason Bernie Sanders, though, is moving away from the pack with Latino voters there, among others, and he is clearly the front runner at this point, with Bloomberg now coming forward, too. So I don't see the firepower there than other than Bloomberg Bernie coming down to the wire. That's what we're going to see in coming weeks, particularly on Super Tuesday. I think the two of them break up the delegates there. My hope, both for talk radio's sake, but also for the country, I want to see them head into the convention. Because, Dan, I'm not sure that we were going to go. That's up in the air to the Democrat convention because often they won't give us guests and, you know, they don't like talk radio and all that stuff. If that convention looks like it's going to be a brokered convention where they have to decide, wow, Because anything could come out of there. You know who could come out as a nominee? Hillary. Or Mrs. Obama.
Isn't that the one in Milwaukee?
Yes.
Yeah, that could pass anyway.
Yeah, well, they're not exactly big-time towns this time around. It's Milwaukee and it's Charlotte.
Yeah,
I've been to Charlotte. It's okay.
Charlotte's a cool city.
Yeah, it's not.
I just never had any desire to go to Milwaukee.
Right. Cleveland was good. I like Cleveland. No,
first time that's ever been uttered on air anywhere.
I know. No, it was fine. It was manageable. There were some things there, the ballparks and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and all that. There was enough that it wasn't bad. Let's face it. You come to the big time when you come to Philadelphia, as they did last year, 2016. So we'll be in Charlotte, though. And that will not be an unexciting convention. Anytime there's Trump there and all, there's going to be a lot of action. Okay, here is our salute, though. This guy is in big preparation for tomorrow night. America, it's like a cotillion ball. He's like a debutante. This is the first time America's going to see Mini Mike on the big stage tomorrow night. I can hardly wait. Here are just a few of the things that have surfaced just in the last few days that Minnie Mike has said.
We all know Mike Bloomberg can get it done.
There's this enormous cohort of black and Latino males, age, let's say, 16 to 25, that don't have jobs, don't have any prospects, don't know how to find jobs, don't know what their skill sets are, don't know how to behave in the workplace.
You got it!
Taxes or life? Which do you want to do? Take your poison.
We like Mike.
Xi Jinping is not a dictator. He has to satisfy his constituents or he's not going to survive.
He's not a dictator?
No, he has to. He has a constituency to answer to.
We like Mike.
I could teach anybody, even people in this room, so no offense intended, to be a farmer. It's a process. You dig a hole, you put a seed in, you put dirt on top, add water, up comes the corn. You have to have a different skill set. You have to have a lot more gray matter.
We like Mike.
We like Mike. Do you know why we are here tonight? You do? Why are we here tonight?
I'll tell you where I'm going. First, Iowa, then New Hampshire. Maybe I can get the whole country to behave.
All right, that's Mike Bloomberg as Mary Poppins. Amazing. Just amazing what this guy has said, but Democrats are desperate. Okay, big 11 o'clock hour straight ahead. We'll get you ready for all this stuff. You're with Dom here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Weekdays 9 till noon on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.